Like the bail system, people talk about the bail system. If you keep the bail system to what your criminal history is, I think it's a pretty fair way to go. And I've seen the most privileged not go to race or gender, but go to money. If you have money, in most countries, you can get out of just about anything. And it applies here. We've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
From celebrity charges.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
To a judge's son that gets arrested.
Oh, sure.
It 100%. Remove race and gender. Add dollar signs.
Hey, guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You trying to be a street cop?
Welcome back, guy and girl. So they're here for the second time, and it's no surprise the first time was great, and none other than... introduce yourself and tell us who you guys are, and we'll go from there.
Ellie Alfonso, current law enforcement lieutenant in Virginia, and I work with Coach Mike at Gracie Baja.
Coach Mike, Leonardi. With Gracie Baja, we got a couple schools here in Central Jersey. Also run a defensive tactics certification program for law enforcement officers. I think that's going to be expanding pretty soon, too, to civilians, to weapons retention, to, you know, we do women's self-defense, anti-bullying, anything related to Brazilian jiu-jitsu and self-defense is really our area of expertise, I'd say. And the other big thing is that, and I've just learned this, and I've been in health and wellness, rehabilitation, sports performance, just human health for 18 years. And the tie-in to all of that with the physical side, the mental side, and the social side of things in terms of making sure, because the context is always different, but it all ties into why I'm tied to jiu-jitsu so much, I think, is because it's always, to me, I found it to be the best vehicle for human development, period. And it checked off a lot of major boxes. To me, I always kind of categorize that as checked off the physical health, it checks off the mental health, and it checks off the social health stuff. And it has those components that work very well. So how do we take that, apply that, contextualize that for specific populations? And law enforcement's been the one that we've been focused a lot on. And Ellie is certainly bringing all of her years of expertise on not just the physical aspect of it, but then case law and understand. And the more that we do that, I think we talked about this on the last podcast, is how much there is into the training side of things of from a mental health perspective, from all these other aspects. So I'm fascinated by that stuff. I think it's super important.
What does the Defense Tactics School for Law Enforcement look like? Like, I get you kind of explained a little bit, but where can people find it essentially before we even carry on?
Yeah, so G as in girl, B as in boy, Princeton.com. On our website, we have a law enforcement, our defensive tactics page. You can go there to find out information about it, upcoming classes, which we're revamping now for 2023. So that's where they can go for it.
Run me through the synopsis of what a program looks like. How many days? What's the course look like?
Yeah, Ellie, I'm going to pass that to you.
So we have a standard 1 8-hour day, which is you come in, we have a predetermined lesson plan, what we're working on. And if you have no experience, we have a class just for that. Because just to know the basics of, you know, sprawling, framing, how to hip escape, you have to, and when you have a vest on and a gun belt on, it's a different animal. things feel a lot better in a gi or no gi on a nice soft mat. Because I don't know, but if you, the hell of the vest was you lose like this being able to compress or bend yourself sometimes. And now with the external vest, great for your hips, but it's a whole different ball game for maneuverability because now you have all these items that are smacking around, getting stuck. So we try to make sure that you know how to move like that. We have a 3-day, which is a little bit more intensive, right? It covers a little bit more weapon retention. And we have a 5-day, which is like a train the trainer, which is we prefer people to be already certified instructors. And they come in, we teach them our lesson plan, what we think is the best method to teach. And then we do scenario training. So that 5-day, you get a certification from us saying, Gracie Baja, for our defensive tactics law enforcement program, you're a certified instructor now. Give you 2 years of support, call, ask questions, and just pretty much get you set up to then take this back to your agency and within your own agency policy and guidelines, work it into your defensive tactics lesson plan and be able to apply it to your troops.
How much further ahead do you think someone will be trained-wise? And I'll say from the 1-day, the 3-day, and the 5-day. I know obviously the 5 days for trying to put a plan together. But what do you think everybody should take, the 3-day at least?
At minimum, you got to hit a couple 8-hour days. The 3-day is ideal because you get to see stand-up game, ground control, weapon retention, and a scenario or two. Because to me, you could do all the training in the world, but if I don't put a red man suit on or a blower suit on or some sort of suit on and then pressure test you, give you some sort of stressors, make you actually react and make cognitive decisions, then you're just going through the motions. We're just shadow boxing all day long.
Yeah.
So the 3-day for me, that's the hardest one to get people to commit to because 3 days off of work. Agencies don't want to approve that. Or if some of these folks are paying for it themselves, it could be a big nut for them. But the 3-day is where it's at because you get to put it all together.
It's so interesting that people will begin to put a dollar tag on essentially their life.
Yeah.
It's fucking wild to me. You know, even for our classes, I'll say, you know, we're in the Cleveland area. How come there's 106 people in this class when I know there's 4,000 cops in this area? Why are you here and they're not? And how valuable is your life? Is it worth the $299 tuition to be here for the day? Even if you hear or see something that might save your life, like staying off the driver's side in a traffic stop. I drove here this morning. Dude, this guy on the road that I come down, making a traffic stop, young guy, literally get out of the car, looks back at traffic, it's rush hour, and he's on the driver's side of the car, and cars just breezing his back. Next to him, complete open space, open field. If this dude pulled a gun and started firing him, he's into traffic, and he's dead. And, you know, it's crazy because you might have a guy like that. I'm not picking on that guy in particular. But you might have a guy like that who's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to go to that class. It's $299. Like, but what's your life worth? And it's not a sell. We are confident that if you come to a training course like mine and one like yours, that it'll change your whole thing. Like, where do you want the pain? You want it in your bank account for a couple $100 or less than $1,000? Or do you want it in your broken orbital bones when somebody knocks your fucking face to pieces?
Yeah, and we're not going to get the training that we need daily with what is provided standard at the academy. And it's no dig to an academy. They offer what they can offer. They have who they can bring in because even they got to pay a fee. And some people are top dollar. Like I know companies out there that come in for a day class. They're charging $10,000. So what I know about our program and the message to get out there is the biggest difference is this, is we have a three-pronged approach. It's the technical. Because you have to be able to understand and testify to why something works. Why did that arm break? Not me just yelling, stop resisting, stop resisting. Hey, you're pushing against me. You're gonna break your own arm, right? Then we give you the case law, right? So while you're going hands-on, are you able to articulate and justify in your own mind why we're going up and down this force continuum? What is changing? What is evolving? What is the crime becoming? How do you testify to it? And the third one, the big one for me, is teaching you how to de-escalate and manage yourself. Because I learned in 24 years of doing this job, I remember my first use of force. It was a reality check. It was a short, skinny little dude, hammered as hell at a house, domestic with his girlfriend, and he was gonna go and rescue because he was drunk. And I remember walking him out of the house, and he's like, all right, go in the ambulance, and he turned around, and he grabbed me by the throat.
Wow.
And I remember the first thing that went through my mind, I was like, what the fuck? This little guy grabbed me, and then he had intent. So the only thing I thought to do, I remember I put my hand in his throat and I pushed him up against the cruiser and then my brain went blah. And then I remember pepper spraying him and then a stupid wife with her kid jumps on my back.
Wow.
And it was my off-duty lieutenant It was a townhouse community. He came out, and I remember he was yelling, like, it's me, because I went from Officer Alfonso to ghetto real fast. Fuck this, fuck you, now I'm hitting everybody, kid included, like, I don't care.
Right.
Right? Because my trigger went.
Yeah.
Because I felt threatened. And I remember afterwards, I'm like, all right, who am I going to talk to about this? And he was like, all right, you have another call pending. And I cleared the jail, and I'm like, okay, well, like, my heart rate was up.
Sure.
I had the shakes.
Yep.
I was like, this is embarrassing. Like, how did this little shit get the jump on me? I just did the academy. I did kung fu when I was 10, and I was, like, defeated morally. I'm like, well, how am I going to go to a call now? And it years of that bullshit until I started training myself and going to classes and, and just seeking, you know, some sort of martial arts training to understand what was happening, to go, wait a minute, after every use of force, the officer has not gone through the same emotional stressors as a victim of any crime. But you can't call a cop a victim because it's like, oh, don't say that. But it's like, wait a minute, we're going through the same chemical dumps, same stress hormones. And then what happens? We go to the jail. We come back out, right? You go to the next call. You go to the next call. Maybe you have another use of force. Like, I know New Year's the 30th, I had 3 use of forces for the same officer. All legit, all fine. But at some point, you can bet your ass, I'm like, yo, are you good to go? Come in, let's hang out for a little bit. Do you want some coffee? Right? What's going on with the kids and wife? Like, I'm trying to assess where his head's at, because you don't want now an overreaction or an underreaction.
He's on edge.
Yeah, right? Man. Like,
human beings, yeah.
Exactly, right? So I found that, and I don't think it's malicious. I think it's a lack of understanding.
Human behavior. Cops are human beings. You got to start treating them like they're humans and not some tool of the government that's robot, right?
And like, then you wonder why there's a blow up. You wonder why they overreacted. Like, the biggest lie I was ever told, and anyone can call me out on this one, right? I remember being told the academy, if somebody tries to hit you, it's not personal. Take it personal. But fuck you. It's the most personal thing in the world.
Right.
You're trying to kill me.
Right.
Like, you're hitting me, right? So it is personal. I can take it personal, but I have to react professionally, right? But I have to react with purpose, under control, and be efficient with what I do. So that's why when we do our classes, we talk a lot. We inject a lot of knowledge. And while we're pressure testing you, we want you to monitor you. Are you breathing? Are you chest breathing, right? Are you hitting an amygdala hijack? What is happening with you? Because I find that if we just talk about it and make you aware of it, that being scared is normal, shaking after use of force is normal. Like, my big thing, I come on scene, I separate my guy, my troop. I got this guy. I'll pick him up. We handcuff him. You go to your car. And then I go, Dennis, are you okay? No, I'm not asking you what happened. I'm not doing a roadside IA. Are you good? You're good? You sure? I'll tell you what, Frankie will transport him. I'll meet you there. And if you're good, you're good. We keep talking a couple days later, because I had a great officer, man. Back-to-back uses of force is the third one. That trigger went, and this guy, he hit my officer in the face. We got him handcuffed, and the officer lunged, like, fuck you, don't you fucking put your fucking hands on me. And it was like, whoa, where'd that come from? Well, this was number 3. Big dude, third time he'd been assaulted, and how much more do you want someone to take? He had a bunch of other things going on, but we weren't dealing with that. So I think with use of force sometimes, you go to a class, and it's like you say, hit the back. Stop resisting. Or everybody do jujitsu. But there's more, right? There's how are we doing it? What are we doing it? Why are we doing it? And am I okay afterwards after I did it? So that's what we try to bring together. And then he has a whole component of it that we can get into, because I believe in de-escalation as a tool. But if I can't regulate me, I'm useless to you. So that's just the reality of it.
When I hear you talking about, you know, people not training, I try to understand why people think they don't need to train. I typically think it's not going to happen to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they think. And man, there's nothing more of a reality check than it happening to you, right? Like, they just don't. We have classes. We had a class designed to walk you through what to prepare for if you're in a shooting, what happens at the time of the shooting, and what it's like after the shooting. Mm-hmm. Just an OIS. Just you shot.
Yes.
What's going to happen then? I'm telling you, literally, nobody even take the free ones, because they don't believe that they're ever going to be in a shooting. And statistically, they're not. But now, it is highly likely that you're going to be in a use of force situation, no question about it, and have to use force. And listen, we've all been around a long time. I've watched the people I've worked with. I got people like never threw a punch in their life trying to go out and be the police. And thankfully enough, their fucking coworkers are tough enough to help them. Not that we're the toughest guys in the world. But they're like little wieners, you know, like they're like little dorks. They're not. You could say, okay, I'm a wiener, I'm a dork, but like now I'm gonna take on this new persona. Even though I know I have to go train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or some kind of self-defense, taking these courses and take it seriously. But they, you got men showing up 135, 140 pounds, never been in a fight in their lives, trying to be law enforcement officers. Their command presence is that of My Little Pony. You know, they can't, and it's dangerous, dude. This is where people die.
I feel the same way. This is going to be a very controversial statement. I don't mean it for controversy.
No.
But for women, like if you're a woman in law enforcement.
Oh, I agree.
And if you're a small statured guy in law enforcement or a big guy in law enforcement, everybody's got to be tested.
Right.
And I find that one, it really sucks to be vulnerable. It's a scary feeling. Right? If you don't know your own strengths and weaknesses and you don't take a good hard look at yourself, but yet you want to put on a badge and a gun and have the authority of life or death and freedom, you have to have some serious reality checks. And the honest one is, what can I really do? I know what I'm capable of, right? And I know in the right scenario with the right backup, I'm capable of more. But I also know that I better be able to hold on for about 45 seconds to 60 seconds and deal with that blast of a violent encounter for my cavalry to get there. Because I can't take on everybody. I'm going to take you with me if I can, or I'm going to make you look like you. Bro, if you fucking come for my life, I'm taking a piece of you with me. That's my mentality. I'm going the fuck home, right? But a lot of people, they can't even get there because it's just a fear. And I got people at my agency, love this dude, man. But every year he's like, I hate DT. Why do we have to do it? Because we do the reviews, the critiques. I hate DT. Why do we have to do it? And I'm like, well, because you want to live. And he comes in, he does great. But he hates it. He hates the physicality of it. He hates being vulnerable. He hates learning something new. It just puts his headspace somewhere he doesn't like to be. But then I'm going to send you to a call and you're going to come across a bad person who does not care. Because professional criminals don't give a shit about your feelings, right? This is what I try to tell new officers. I get your intention. I understand you want to do good, but you're going to come across people that just don't fucking care. So you have to have the fortitude to deal with that and do your job. And if they come at you with fire, be able to control them and take them into custody. Pretty nice story. Like, I don't know what happens to people that they think that their perception is going to overrule someone else's intent. You know what I mean? Like, well, no, I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. Right. I want to only do good in law enforcement, which is great. But then you come across a hardened criminal with a 44-page rap sheet who would kill his own mother, slaps you in the mouth, and you're appalled now. Like, how did this happen? How are you surprised this happened? It's a matter of if for that when. For us is when.
Yeah, right.
Someone's going to test us at some point.
You don't get to walk away as a cop.
No.
You don't get defused, right? I'm at a bar. I'm at a nightclub. Some shit's going down. You know, off-duty Dennis Benino, which is I'm off-duty permanently now. I mean, I'm gone, brother.
What drives me insane is the people that comment on use of force. I almost have to not listen and not watch because I get visceral about it. Because I hear people comment on uses of force, and one, they comment without having all the facts, which drives me insane, right? An average citizen that gets arrested has a right to due process. We force our due process on our officers. We expedite it. It's like release the body camera now, make a statement now, conjecture now, because we've allowed media and people to dictate the pace at which we respond.
Right.
And it's wrong. Like, I understand we have to be transparent, but you can't say anymore, listen, it just happened. Give us a little bit to work it out. And it's, no, you're covering up. And it's like, if we did this to the average citizen that was arrested and took away their due process, there would be lawyers lining the street. But for us, it's okay. Okay, so now you have that issue, which breeds more hesitancy. But right now, I think what you're looking at is, like you said, it's out of control. The lawlessness is, we agreed as a society, right? These are our rules. This is what we agreed to. We want you to enforce them. And now we've gotten to the point where someone can commit a murder, but they can get bailed out. Because why? Explain to me that the number of people that are just turned and released, because you know who's victimized is some poor unsuspecting Joe Schmo that has no part of politics, no part of anything, who's the next solid victim of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we do a huge injustice. I've seen 24 years of this, and this is the worst I've ever seen it, where even it's so, the logic is, there's just no logic anymore.
Right.
It's just gone. And I'm having a hard time functioning in a world where logic doesn't prevail to some degree. Like that poor deputy that was just killed over New Year's by a guy that never should have been out.
California.
Someone explain that one to me. Like, I don't understand it.
Why is there no accountability on behalf of policy? Like, you know, it's crazy. Like, you have all the accountability in the world, but the people who put the laws in place, no accountability. Judge who let him out, no accountability.
Yes.
They have complete immunity. People know there's judicial immunity. It's wild. And the craziest thing is it's the best system in the world. As nuts as that sounds.
It is the most, it is one of the most flawed systems, but it's the most replicated legal system in the entire world.
I know.
Because the benefit goes to you, if you get arrested, that I have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt it was you. And then we have layers, right? We have from reasonable suspicion to probable cause to reasonable doubt. And in there, we have motions to suppress. We'll give you a lawyer if you can't afford one. Not perfect. It's very flawed. Like the bail system, people talk about the bail system. If you keep the bail system to what your criminal history is, I think it's a pretty fair way to go. And I've seen the most privileged not go to race or gender, but go to money. If you have money, in most countries, you can get out of just about anything. And it applies here. We've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
From celebrity charges.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
To a judge's son that gets arrested.
Oh, sure.
It 100%. Remove race and gender, add dollar signs. And it's influence, right? What is your sphere of influence? And we've allowed all these outside things come into what used to be Lady Justice that was blind.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been blind, to be honest with you. And I got to be honest with you, and I can't speak much on it. I'm experiencing it right now. And, you know, I have found a lot more compassion for an improper judicial system. And you know, to be honest with you, and the victims of it, right? Now, again, it is a double-edged sword. We have a friend of mine, my friend Matt. He works now. He was shot many times in the line of duty. He's now an investigator for a defense firm. And he's like, but it's not what you think it is, dude. He's like, we're literally finding out like how bad these cops are doing things. Like they're not even giving these people opportunity. They're slapping charges on folks. He's like, we're really defending people who need to be defended. There are really like victims of like these agendas that we're trying to defend them. He's like, dude, you know, I bleed blue. He's like, but it's real. Like people are literally being charged in some of these cases where they shouldn't be. They didn't look into it. They didn't do a proper investigation. I remember I had a job. I had to go pick a woman up. She was arrested. I forgot how I ended up with her, but she's back in booking. And I'm reading the report from one of the juvenile detectives. And I said to her, when you get out, because I'm looking through all the reports, and I know this guy did a shit job. I mean, I was actually offended by it because this woman shouldn't have been here. And if she was supposed to be here, he should have done way better the job when I'm reading. I go, hey, listen, make sure you get yourself a good attorney. Because it's not like I'm trying to emphasize. I actually felt like her rights were violated. You know, I couldn't do anything about it at that point. I'm not a judge, but mm-hmm. I said, make sure you get yourself a good attorney to look at this because it was a bullshit job. It wasn't like it was a serious offense. It was like a bullshit job. Uh-huh. And I thought our guy should be doing a lot more than this bullshit job. This woman who was a mother of kids. And I'm like, this is what we're in the fucking sixth biggest police department in the state of New Jersey. And this is the kind of bullshit we're investigating. And writing this, you're assigned a detective to this. This is where your detective went. We got fucking rapes through the. You got everything going on here, you know. Especially when I say juvenile detective, we got all the stuff we could be doing. And this is what we're doing. We spent a week of detective, on. It's wild to me. It's a flawed system, and I'm trying to do the best that I can to unflaw it. I don't agree with a lot of the stuff. I agree with some of the stuff, and I'm not. This is not an opinion based thing. This is just. It's the truth.
We've all seen it.
Oh.
And I was never, I'm not an anti-IA person. Like some people have hard grudges against IA. If you're doing your job and you're doing it to the best of your ability and you're following policy, protocols, laws, and you're a decent human being, you'll be fine. I don't care. IA me all day long.
Maybe.
For some places.
Yeah, because, yeah. Dude, they use IA as a weapon in other places. They get rid of guys and girls. They just, dude, I'm telling you, bro, like I know a girl here right now. They did her so fucking dirty. Because she reached out to me and she's like, I'm just leaving the whole profession. I went, I can't believe how dirty they did you. We just had a woman on the podcast last week. She's a defense attorney for like, you know, what's it called? The list that you go on when you.
Oh, Brady list.
Brady list, Brady Giglio, right?
Yep.
And she's like, it's sad to watch them weaponize the Brady list to get rid of people.
Yeah.
Right? I had a guy write to me today. You wouldn't believe. Like, he's employing proper tactics, and his sergeant told him he's going to cycle him back through field training again because he says the tactics are improper because nobody does them here because he's making passenger side approaches on traffic stops.
See, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
That's my point. We can sit here and say that because you work at a better agency. Maybe that's the case. But like, the reality is we've got to be compassionate to like the stories that I hear. Like, hey, man, I did nothing wrong, but they don't like me here because I made 3 extra traffic stops last night, and now they're IA-ing me for like not wearing the right color socks.
See, that's insane to me.
Dude, they do it. These fuckers do this shit to these
people. I believe it because I hear horror stories, and I am lucky. we have flaws, like anybody does.
Yeah.
But then when I go out and I hear other things from other people, I'm like, man, I'm in a 25-year marriage where we have arguments and we have disagreements, but it's a great fucking marriage.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to complain about that, but I always forget that there's a world outside of my own little bubble where there's shit leadership, oof, shit agencies.
Oof.
Listen, we have leaders that I'm not a fan of either. And I actually don't want to use the word leader.
Zach Miller worked at an agency. He's retiring this month. He's our case law guy. He's known in Virginia.
Yes.
Their chief that they put in place for the wrong reasons was so bad. He's fired now. He got the boot. He was so bad. They hired a leadership coach to walk around with him. Every day, this guy had somebody meet him and walk around with him to help him make decisions. I guess that was the county's last-ditch effort to try to make sure they can insulate themselves from a lawsuit, which is no doubt pending because that's what this guy's going to do. I'm sure of it. They lost, like, I forgot how many people, and I don't want to say a wrong number, but like they lost, like, 8 cops a month in a 200-man agency.
I believe it.
Eight a month. And they finally plugged the hull, the leak in the hull, after losing, like, 48 cops in, like, a year. They don't even know what to do. They're picking everybody out of regular divisions, you know, a specialized division, put them right back at the patrol. They got nobody. And it's just this irresponsibility of, like, why did you let this man come in the first place? This is what you get. And I tell these guys and girls, if you're working for an agency like this, you might hear the other people that work there, stick it out, it's not that bad. If they are coming for your neck,
go.
You get the fuck out, because if you get fired and you want to be a cop, it's over.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
One of the things that blew my mind when I did the instructor certification program for Gracie Baja, their ICP,
yeah,
they're more structured and more organized on goals and objectives and examples of leadership I've ever seen in my career in any police agency. Hands down. They're more organized, more structured with their expectations, with their lesson plans, and it's over almost 1,000 schools.
Yeah.
And this is their minimum standard. We don't have that for law enforcement. And it's such a frustrating thing because we could be so much better, so much more professional. And it start. I mean, listen, everything from incentivizing being an FTO. Like, I don't like that. You shouldn't have to get... An FTO should be a volunteer position. You get selected, you get asked because you want to do it. Not to be an SPO or a master police officer. You must train. Because that's a money incentive. To be a leader, to be... I'm a horrible administrator. I'm god-awful when it comes to spreadsheets, scanning, typing. I did my first PowerPoint for Heather because I'm going to be a guest instructor for her for the New Jersey Women in Law Enforcement Conference. Yeah, I'll be there in March.
You're rolling through.
Yep, I'll
be
there.
What day is it in March?
March 1st and 2nd.
I got to write that on my calendar.
Yeah. So
it's an iPlay. It's right by my house.
Yeah, yeah. She hit me up and asked me to come teach 2 classes on use of force management.
We should roll through together.
Let's go. I'll go with you.
All right.
I'll be happy to.
All right.
You
want to take the Mercedes?
You know what? You just threw me off because you asked me on a date by a dude. First time ever, so I wasn't sure how to answer. I got a little flustered.
Yeah, listen.
I was like, whoa.
And, let's be honest. Not a bad looking fella.
You know what? You'd actually make a great butch.
Yeah.
I'm eyeballing you because of the hair and everything. So. You completely threw me off. What were we talking about?
Me and you dating.
That's right.
Yeah, me and you dating.
Yeah, the structure.
Correct. So I'm horrible at administrative stuff. So I did my first PowerPoint. But I pride myself on being there for my officers. I'm not better than. I have a different responsibility, right? My sergeant's personal life is more important to me than mine. When do you want off? I try to lead by example. And I lead by based on what the worst people I ever worked for is my greatest motivation, right? Selfish fucks that never gave a shit.
Oh, yeah.
And then my favorite was, hey, Sarge, what do I do about this? I'm not sure. And the response was, well, what do you think we should do? Dick, I'm asking you, like, I'm lost. Can you give me some guidance? Not, you're lost. So you're putting it back on me, right? So I find that in leadership, we don't have the right motivation to be there. It's a lot of responsibility, a lot of vicarious liability. What's the incentive to do it? And then you lose more power. The closer you get to the man Oz, the less power you have. That's a guaranteed. So captains aren't that much more powerful because there's always a number one. So it's like, where do we start? How do we even begin to turn this ship around?
Well,
agency-wise.
The only thing you can do, honestly, and I've really looked into this, you might get 10%, 15% of the existing leadership to hear us. And they go, well, okay, I just need somebody to tell me. Right? I didn't know I was doing this. It's happened to me a lot.
Yep.
But we are planting the seeds now for the future. So what you guys are going to come to the conference. Well, at least you're going to come to the conference. I don't know if you're going to come, Mike. But when you come, you'll see what separates our conference from everybody else's. It's this, nobody's sent there, dude. Everybody asks to go. Nobody's told you're going to the Street Cop Conference. They're like, yo, I need to go, or they're going on their own. Because you get into a room with 1,500 to 2,000 cops that are just like us. And then you start hearing about what their intentions are for their future. And these are the little, like, I get, that's the once a year that I get to look at the crops and I go, looks like things are coming along just nicely.
Yep.
So you can take 2,000 cops and now you've got all these people germinating this, as they, especially as they progress through the ranks, they're now germinating this new thought of how do we lead? What's important? Because you can't convince the unconvincible.
No.
Right? It's like when people say, they'll write in the group and want to post it. Hey, any ideas on how to pitch a canine to my administration? They don't seem to be too hot on the idea. Yeah, here's a newsflash. Save your breath. They don't want a fucking dog. And if you hear this, like, oh, we'll try it again next time. You know, come back to us in 6 months and we'll consider it. They don't want a dog, right? Everybody wants to pitch a dog. There's always that guy or girl wants to pitch a dog. If you actually understood the importance of a canine at a police agency and why everyone should have them, because it cuts down on use of force tremendously. People are like, oh, we don't want a dog biting somebody. Do you guys realize how much use of force you're cutting down on when a dog's barking on somebody?
Just the bark alone.
Yeah. And these guys are like, or how much money they make if your dog's a drug dog and it sniffs and they hit money. You get 20% of that, right? So you're paying for the dog expenses, but they don't, because they don't understand. Nobody said to these guys, what you do is you get one chief saying, don't get a dog, they're a pain in the ass. They cost money. This dog's at the vet all the time. You had to outfoot the car. This guy's got to go to train. Guys, we're not even looking at the other side of things, what's important. So, you know, I'm just back to us going on a date. I forgot what I was saying.
No, you know, I wanted to jump in on
something. Yeah, go, Mike. Yeah, you haven't. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. No, because we talked about this early on. I heard you talking about why people don't want to do defensive tactics, or there's a certain population, or even some of the, like you say, we can't even, some of the free classes they don't even go to. And I in my brain, because I've been thinking about, I'm a health coach as well, certified health coach. I've been in doing this for a long time. And I look at it as individuals that are living a shitty lifestyle, right? That, like, hey, look, like, you can extend your life by just walking a little bit more, eating a little bit better. And you can't convince them until they have that pain point that pops up, right? They have a, you know, heart attack or whatever. And then now they're motivated. And going back to, like you said, you talk about this all the time in terms of how do you change this culture of, I think, of identifying and seeing, because there's a lot of them, law enforcement officers are humans. There are some humans that are intrinsically motivated to develop and grow and want to be the best at what they do. Some of them, maybe the old crew is more like, this is the way that it's been. It's like, how do you identify them and build their skills up to create a larger portion of this culture that is now all about leadership, about taking care of themselves and exercising and talking to people when they need to talk to people about their mental health or whatever that is. And I think what you guys are doing in that sense, right, that's probably the best strategy, is like, find the ones that want that, like, because they're going to show up, right? It's not like they're the ones that intrinsically are going to show up. Empower them as much as possible to help them develop those skills and let them become your ambassadors. That's, and right, so slowly but surely, right, the hope is that that culture will grow and grow and grow, so that new recruits come in. These are the people they hear. These are the people they see. Maybe they start attracting more of those people at the end of the day.
We can't wait for them to change things, right?
Right.
Oh. No, because not changing it. If they wanted to change it, we talked about this yesterday on the podcast, you'd have the DOJ in here, knowing that we're one of the leading law enforcement training companies in the country, and we have this podcast that's top 100, and they come in and say, hey, you have some ideas? Yeah, we got a fuck ton. We're actually releasing some slide decks on, like, five things you can do to improve recruits at the academy. Simple stuff that's in the queue of our, we have Hootsuite. It's going to be dumped out into the world. And I write this stuff, my ideas, and I just put it out there, and people go, we're going to do that. So you can't wait for people to change. You got to do it yourself. And that's what we're here saying. Like,
yeah.
Hey, man, we don't run the academy, but we also get classrooms and have our own academy. And if you'd like to come to the real academy, I'm sorry, academies out there. I know some of you guys are really good. And you know, you said earlier, like, well, the academies have to work with what they got. I submit that there is limited funds, limited stuff, but I think anybody can get creative.
Yeah.
I think you guys can find better things. I'm not saying you. I'm saying in general, academy directors, people who care enough, they can find better things. They can find better videos to watch. They can find better trainers.
Better instructor selection.
Yeah.
One of my instructors when I was in the academy was there on a protective order, couldn't carry a gun for his agency.
Yeah, I know.
And this was a trip, man. We were in learning about traffic law, right? So, of course, it was like, you know, 462, 301, no OL, right? And then he'd go, no OL. My wife's new boyfriend has no license. And we were all like, right? And then it'd be like, you know, domestic violence. Yeah, what I got accused of, and now I'm here. We were like, what? Like, is this a fucking joke?
Right.
And that's the problem. And a lot of good cops don't want to go teach in an academy.
The board. It's not part of the thing, you know?
It's like a lot of good cops don't want to be SROs. Or they don't want to be, you know, FTOs because they want to have their own car and
well,
be proactive.
I would tell guys, my partners would be like, so my partner would say to me, I have really good partners. And they'd be like, but you're like the fucking lead FTO. They're always going to give you a guy. And I go, yeah, dude, that's part of being my partner. I'm going to be gone for 3 to 6 months out of the year with somebody else.
I loved being FTO.
And I did because, dude, I was able to develop somebody, right? I did miss my partner. I did miss the pursuit he was in because I was still doing three. It took us three times the amount to do the paperwork because I'm running the guy through the paperwork and explaining things and explaining what the different acronyms mean and what they mean. But dude, at the end, like to watch all these guys thrive and hear the feedback later on and bro, the people that I used to field train would get me gifts at the end, right? Who's ever heard of a field training officer getting like these guys were getting thoughtful gifts. They weren't just like, hey, man, I wanted to get you, like, I will buy you lunch for the FTO. They were like, yo, dude, I bought you, like, this plaque, and, like, I had your fucking kid's name put on the bottom and engraved and, like, embossed, and then I'm going to get you, like, these shoes. I know you said you like them, and I just don't know what to do to thank you so much. And you'd have their other classmates, 8, 9 guys coming out of the academy with them, and I mean girls when I say that as well, and they're like, can I just do, like, a day or, like, 3 days with you? Can I get my days off? Can I ride with you guys? Because their fucking field training officer is a mope. He's a mutt.
Miserable. And they're miserable.
He's a mutt. He's just, guys I got hired with. He's a mutt. Yeah. They don't want to hear nothing. They think it's all just traffic tickets. I remember I had a kid right out of field training because my partner. Make our first traffic stop into Best Buy, right into the parking lot. He's driving. I was the front seat passenger because we were two-man units. And I get out of the car. He gets out, slams the fucking door, walks up on the driver's side. Like, the worst taxi I've seen in my life. And I'm like, but this is a new guy. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? So he comes back and I go, what the fuck was that? I'm real senior, right? I'm on the sergeant's list. I'm real senior. And he's like, he was right. I was wrong. He's like, I'll never forget. He said this to me. And I'm still friends with the guy today. And I thanked him for doing this to me because it taught me a lesson. He's like, the fuck are you yelling at me for, bro? You know who the fuck I field train with. Yeah. He's like, you know what the fuck I got? He's like, I don't fucking know what I'm doing. He's like, 12 weeks I sat in a car with that fucking guy. He's like, he didn't teach me anything. So I'm trying to make a traffic stop. I'm like, you're right.
How many times have we heard that in our career? My FTO was horrible.
Oh.
My FTO was horrible. And then you say something, hey, so-and-so shouldn't be an FTO, and you go, we don't have anybody else.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. What? So, again, outside observer. Like, I'm not in this field. I don't know much at all. But I think about, again, I go back to, like, the human. And you talk about some of the older generations and these mopes and things. And everyone's different. You know, why right. they're there is different. Do you see a real effect of just someone that's on the force for 15, 20-plus years that is just a shell of what they were before? Oh, yeah. And that's one of the reasons
why? Yes and
why.
No. You got guys okay. are 22 years on still getting it, right? Like, still okay. motive. You know, you got motherfuckers out there still getting it. Won't leave. They love it. They're
Got it. Okay.
I honestly, Mike, what I think it comes down to just, like, let's take the human population as a whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about why there's a 1%.
Got it.
Okay. And I'm not trying to sound like a dick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why is there a 1%? Yeah. The fee to get into the 1% is the same for everybody, unless you were born into it. That's a different story. Yeah. But somebody along that bloodline became a 1% or somehow, some way.
Yeah.
The question is, who wants to join the 1%ers? And the 1% of people in the country, if people don't know, are people who have a household income of more than $440,000 a year, right? It is not unattainable. You've been told it's not, but I have an uncle who, quote unquote uncle, is almost my age, who has a power washing business who almost makes that a year because he works his fucking face off and forfeited everything else. And it's him and a helper. So don't tell me that like you could never be that, because I can show you a guy who ain't the brightest person by a long shot,
of course, yeah.
making fucking $390,000 a year power washing two houses a day. And like not big houses, like 2,000 square foot houses a day, because he gets them done. He goes one half the day, has lunch, goes to the other half, and works like 5, 6 o'clock a night. Guy's making like $400,000 a year. So like,
yeah.
People say things like, oh, these millennials are lazy. Folks, 21 years ago when I got into this field, we had lazy fucks. And Ellie will tell you that. Like,
Yeah.
Like we graduated 10 guys.
Right, exactly.
Two were motivated.
Yeah.
Eight wanted to fucking do nothing. So that's the answer to it.
Every younger generation is, you know, the end of the world, the lazy, you know what I mean?
Right.
I'm sure, you know, obviously the boomers, so to speak, said that about our, you know, our population. But I you're right. I guess my next question is, and this is, sorry to go down this rabbit
hole. No, it's fine. We're good.
Do you think overall one of the, and because I think about HR all the time. And like, as I grow in my business, I think about like, what are the constraints that I need to clear in order to continue to grow my business? And the one that I'm focused on more, and it's just not a skill that I had necessarily, I don't think anybody has it initially, is your ability to identify, to recruit, and to hire talent.
Let me jump in and also give you this, and to get rid of garbage.
And to get rid of garbage, yes.
Because unfortunately, you get a lot more garbage and you get talent. And it takes, you gotta go through a lot of, just like dating, right?
Yes.
You start dating men, women, whatever it may be. It's bad out there, folks.
I did hiring
for about 4 years, and it was the hardest job I did in that agency for a couple different reasons.
And even if you hire five and you get four right, you thought you had five, you're going to get one or two that you're like, how the fuck did we miss this one? It's like here, it's like dating.
Yeah.
But you get better as you go about like picking up on these. Like, I'll give you a few that I know for hiring. We're going to be coming into a fuck ton of layoffs coming up, right? So if you're looking at people who are being laid off, did the whole company close? Or did they get rid of 80% of the company or 20% of the company? You don't want to be picking up that 20% that they laid off, because that was their opportunity to get rid of the 20% they didn't want.
Right.
So they're keeping their best people. Be very weary of somebody who's like, I'm laid off. The company's still open, but I was one of the first to go. Listen, dude, they're sitting there going, this one, that one, this one. That. You know, nobody's getting rid of their key players.
No one's, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
they're not getting rid of nines and tens.
No.
Yeah.
But how about this? Or sixes that are solid fucking trust, right? Nobody's getting rid of, like, the whole organization can't all be A players, because A players don't want to do B player work, C player. And everybody can be compensated appropriately. Just, it's a matter of what you like to do and all that stuff. But just dialing it back a little bit, the one thing that bothers people like me and Ellie is to watch people with potential who come in with the intention of being a great cop. And as soon as they hit field training with this mope, that's what they think police work is. Field training is one of the most foundational parts of law enforcement.
So critical.
And if you are groomed appropriately, like I only had one dude that I couldn't make proactive. And I'll be honest with you, just because like I don't think he had it. Great guy. I just think he had it. Right. I just don't think he kind of was uncomfortable with it. Great guy, but he learned a lot about morals from me. Doing the right thing, making sure you're there for your boys, making sure you don't miss calls, listening to that radio. Don't have your feel-good radio on while you're driving. I don't listen. To me, I have ADD, right? So I can't hear like Jay-Z and listening to my radio. I need to be into that thing. I need to hear where everybody is and take account for where I'm at and what's going on. I'm like locked in, laser focused, scanning my environments while I'm working. So I was able to teach him that stuff, which made him the best he could be. But he was one fucking choice away from going with a guy who's like, here, bro, fill that out, and goes hang out in the sergeant's office, kicks his feet up because he's been there for 12 years, right? Like,
and people quit managers, too. If you're a shitty supervisor, if you're a shitty sergeant, or you're a toxic lieutenant, toxic anything, people walk away from that quicker than, let's say, if you were just a laid-back sergeant, or maybe not the smartest sergeant, but you had the best intention. Maybe you weren't the brightest at Fourth Amendment, but you knew to say, hey, ask Dennis. Dennis will guide you. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's good. Yeah. That's actually good leadership. People don't realize if you don't know what to do, then don't do anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Find the person that does.
Yep.
You know, so like, bro, I mean, I might be running a successful company at some junction, right? If that's what you're calling this. But like, people call sometimes, like a call from billing, and they're like, hey, we have, like, I'm like, I have no idea how it even works. But I have people here who have been here for 3 to 5 to 6 years who have designed the system, and it works flawlessly. Yeah. I just don't know how it goes. You ever hear the thing with, and I guess we're going on to business. You ever hear the thing when Henry Ford was sued? I'm sorry, when he was suing all the major newspapers in the 20s and 30s. And they were running headlines like, Henry Ford doesn't do anything at Ford. And all this other shit. It's actually a real story. And he brought them into this meeting. He invited them on, but he started filing class action lawsuits and won. So he brings them in. And he goes, well, you guys can come in and challenge my integrity if you think I don't know anything about my cars. And so the story goes, the first reporter said, well, tell us how a V8 engine works. Your new Ford V8, how does it work? Grabs the phone, calls up, brings his head engineer in. Pete, tell him how it works. They said, well, tell us how the system of the wheels work. Calls the next guy. send Joey in. Joe, tell him how it works, right? And he told them, I run a, if you look at the Ford system, he changed the whole thing, right? He changed literally almost America completely, namely with the assembly line was his, it was basically his invention. But what he said was, I don't need to know every little detail of everything here. I just make sure I have the right people who know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I sit up top, and it's like the guys who run Dell, Michael Dell's not putting computers together on the assembly line.
Yeah.
He has people. He's not even developing them. He's the guy just going, heh, heh, heh. And that's actually when you look at that as a business guy, you're like, okay, I need to model my business to look more like what their businesses look like. And it takes a big stomach to do that because first you're going to take a financial haircut. You're going to step back out of the weeds and you're like, Dan Espinito, as nuts as it sounds, should not be instructing in the field. But I think there's a balance of it starts to taper off and it starts to shift a little bit this way more and more. Because who am I serving the world better by being me in a classroom or here making sure we put more instructors on? It's no different than being on the side of the road. I used to have this theory. And I don't want to ramble on because we have about 5 minutes left. But we'll obviously do this again. All right.
We have a date.
Oh, that's right.
No pressure.
I better get prophylactics. I know where this is going. I can tell you how you're looking at me. Yeah, yeah. I remember being on the side of the road and thinking like I have an impact on society. Right? I'm locking bad guys up. I can probably knock down two decent arrests a shift. Then I'm like, all right, now I'm teaching cops, right? So I'm teaching 20, 30 guys at a class when I first started. Now they're going out. Then we're on like social media. I'm like, man, we're teaching thousands of cops. Now we're teaching hundreds of thousands of cops. Now we got 45 instructors in the field teaching in person 30, 40,000 cops a year. So the question is, as a business owner, this is the hardest thing about it. Is what I'm doing today the best thing for this business? Is what my plans are for the future the best thing for this business? I was telling Frankie this morning. Sometimes you get in the weeds because you're a practitioner in the field and you're like, fuck, I forgot where we were going. The idea is to sit on top of the mountain and see your road over there and figure out how do you get up here.
Mm. Yeah.
We're going to go that way. We're going to go this way. We're going to go that way. Right? All I should be engineering is how do I double my numbers from last year and do them without jeopardizing any of the morals or the quality of the product here. Maybe it's not possible, but that's how I think. It's not like, can we repeat numbers from last year? That's not the game here, right? How do I go from this? When Dennis Bonino says confidently 5 years ago at a table in Atlantic City to Jesse Hartnett, who was shot in the line of duty from Philadelphia, yep. Brad Gilmore, and there was four people at this whole fucking company, when I sit there and audaciously said to them, you could ask these guys that, folks, this would be the biggest law enforcement training company in the country, I promise you that. And Brad said, I believe you. I know you long enough now, I believe you. To here we are 5 years later, and I probably are. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we probably are. If we're not, we're going to blow the doors off of everybody else, which is fine. Like, that's an audacious statement to make. But I had to think about when I said that, what did that mean? What kind of action did I have to take? How could I get us to here in 5 years? How did I get this podcast to a top 100 podcast in less than 2 years? What did it take? That's how I think about it. So people say, like, we had somebody here yesterday who wanted to do a podcast, and one of our instructors, great guy, didn't have time. So the stuff that took priority, and he's supposed to be on later. I'm going to have to push it off. But I could see from the outside in, like, well, this guy's just doing podcasts every day. But think about what the podcast is about. We are unobscuring the brand of the business every single day. So the more people know about it, in turn, more people are aware that, wow, they have all this training available. We didn't know this is great. Not selling a shit product. You just don't know about it, and when you find out about it, it's gonna be fucking phenomenal. Yeah. So that's just my
and I as a entrepreneur as well, I agree. Like, that's the hardest transition.
Sure.
Is to go from working in your business to on your business. And you take haircuts, you do this, and then your skill set changes.
Yes. Well, right? Dude, it's a whole new game.
Yeah, it's a totally
you have your skill set there. That's great.
Yeah.
But that's no good for the next game. They say it's a big difference between somebody who can go from a $5 million company to a $100 million company. It's a completely different human being.
Totally, yeah.
And I'm trying to understand now is, like, we know who I am to start. I've qualified at a $5 million company. We know that for sure. I'm not giving numbers out, but I promise you I've qualified at a $5 million gross revenue company. And I'm saying to myself now, are you a $100 million year guy, right? And that means with good intention, that means that should come when we're giving so much fucking value that people are just like, listen, there's no ifs, ands, or buts to where I want to put my money. You guys have what I want and need. We get there has to be an exchange because you guys are putting the work in. It doesn't mean Den's getting his teeth platinumed with diamonds and it says Dennis across the front. It means as we procure revenue, I'm putting it all back in, dude. Right? Yeah. I just like we're going to hire three people right today. The ads are going out. And that's the balance of like, I'm looking at like, what do we need to do here? We need three more bodies.
And to tie it back to law enforcement, that's the question that I ask is like, if you look at law enforcement agencies, whether as a whole, and that's harder because they're all separate, independent and stuff, but there's patterns there, right? It's like, who is there and looking at it and understanding what are the constraints, what are the skills that we need as an organization, or it's the chief or whoever it is saying, what do we need to do here to improve our, you know, our training, the efficacy of our you know, all these things. And I think that's something at the end of the day that is, and I don't know how much they talk about it. Obviously, this is more leadership training, things of that nature. But overall, as a culture, that I think it's encouraging to see that's probably starting to get in. Those conversations are happening a hell of a lot more, right?
There has to be two things, and probably more than two, but two come to my head right now. Is one, people who care.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no accountability. You just get paid no matter what, right? And you've got your, you can't go and report that this person who's in charge is not doing their job because you're telling the guy who can get rid of him, but he's the guy who put him there because it's his fucking friend or it's whatever it may be. So there is no recourse to it. So you've got to one, care, but two, let's think about it. No better example than watching politicians who have no experience in life or business going in, taking over administrations and fucking everything up. Yet you, and this is not a political conversation of Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. I'm not going there with this. I'm saying it's clear as day, though. Then you get a guy who's a polished businessman going in, making business decisions, unemotional business decisions, and they have the practical skills. And the same thing applies, right? When you are telling most people, Mike, and you know this, have no business owning a business. People say, oh, this. They open, they close. Yeah, they had no business opening this business. Really, and it's a fucking fucked up thing to say. 99% of people have no business owning a business.
I agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah, they just don't have a go get a job for $143. You want to have money. You go get a job at $212. You're probably really good at that. Just because you have a business doesn't mean you're going to be a millionaire, right? Some people have businesses that make $75,000 bucks a year. They're happy with it because they own a business. There's no boss. But that person's never going to be a $400, $500, $700, $2, $8 million a year revenue generator. Yeah. They just don't have it. And it is a lot of things. So we know that only 1% of the population probably has the skill set to run a business. How could we possibly even begin to believe that that 1% are our top leaders in law enforcement? It's impossible.
Yeah.
So you've got people who probably are good middle managers running the agency, not knowing what they're doing, not having deep thought of how do we make this better? Sitting down and saying, how do I be selfless about this? Why should we have a dog, right? And then I'm a guy who comes out here and starts talking the truth, and they're very offended because accountability,
you're being exposed. It's a very incestuous pool, too. It's the same groups of chiefs that retire and then go somewhere else from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Oh, it's wild.
It's the same pool. It's the same cadre.
They got connections.
Yeah.
They got connections, yeah. Dude.
So you're not changing anything. You're just bringing the same philosophy. Sometimes chiefs become kings, and it's not our agency. It's their fiefdom. And that's a very dangerous place to be, right? Because you have a command staff for a reason. You have your subject matter experts for a reason. But ultimately, it comes down to one person's decision. So it's very interesting.
It's wild.
It is.
And honestly, Mike, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about that. Yeah. You just can't, because the people who are in charge of it are the people who are causing the problems. It's so what we can do is try to start at the bottom instead of starting at the top and hopefully watch it grow.
Yeah.
That's all we can do. That's the only thing I have for that. And I think myself and people like you guys, and we're all just keep coming together and kind of circling around in the same environment here. And there's other police training companies that are on the right. But here's another thing. Like, there are police training companies that are horrendous, and they get involved because there's money and they're teaching crap. But if you go there and a guy's got bars on his collar or fucking feathers on his shoulders, you're like, oh, he must know what he's talking about. He's a police training company and he's a fucking major. No, that is not true. It just isn't, and I can prove that, but it also may be true. So it's not saying like you go to, oh, this guy's a fucking lieutenant. He doesn't know what he's talking about because he's a lieutenant. No, he might be the best there actually is, but just don't think he's the best he is because he's a lieutenant. Correct. Or don't think a guy who's a patrol officer like myself couldn't know anything.
Right.
old Dennis Benito, when I first started, dude, I was a patrolman. I left. I wasn't a sergeant, right? I was on the list. I'm sure I would have been promoted, but I left. I left on an injury. So one of the things that I was dealing with when I was new was like, this guy was never even a sergeant. How could he know what he's talking about? And dude, I mean, I don't know everything, but I'll run circles around your ass in Fourth Amendment case law. Circles. I only know about five people personally that actually understand Fourth Amendment. And Ellie, we haven't talked about it, but I'm sure you're probably one of them. I know legal professionals who still don't understand it, who are legal professionals running professional training companies who do not understand and comprehend how the Fourth Amendment works and how case law is applied because they don't understand what they're saying. Zach Miller is one of the only few that if I need clarification, and sometimes I get lucky and he's like, I didn't think of it that way. That's actually right. I think you're exactly right on that. I would agree with you. And I'm like, oh, shit.
How many prosecutors do you think could apply Fourth Amendment to use of force? Or no, case law on use of force?
Three in the country. Yeah. Bro, like great. Three that's in the insane. Country.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, maybe. And that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best ones are the ones where being a prosecutor really is a political. Like, New York City probably has really good prosecutors at some level because that's a step towards being a political figure. You know, so you might get some real talent in some of these major cities. And a lot of times they're disassociated with the street level district attorneys, whatever they are, who are prosecuting low crime cases. These guys are going to high profile shit. And that's how they get the reputation. Like the Kennedys were high level prosecutors. Rudy Giuliani was a high level prosecutor. Right. And they went on to be the mayor and the president and senators. So the talent is in the people who are trying to get to a political position if you're in the public side. The other talent, you'll meet Jonathan Cohen in a second, who's my attorney, represent me on something else. This dude is magical to watch litigate. And he's not a prosecutor. And he sends shivers down the spines of prosecutors. And he's just a calm guy. He's not a psycho or anything like that. He's just
it's good.
It's who we'd need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is no adversary for him. He's probably top in the state of New Jersey as a litigator. And he doesn't even litigate Fourth Amendment. He's an administrative litigator. He's amazing. An amazing fucking person. So he's on the podcast next, right?
Nice.
So anyway, I'm sorry. Did I sound like I was like full of hot air today?
No, that's good.
You guys like bring out the best in me.
Nice, that's like a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you guys, but you know, it's so funny. We always like come in here like the second time and I'm like, and then it starts going and I'm like, this is why you fuckers are back.
See?
Because thank the magic. You. Like, dude, the stuff that you guys come up with, like, there's some real magic in this room.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think we bring the best out of each other.
I think it's the right vehicle. I think it's like-minded with the absolute good intentions that want to give back.
And as you sit here, I think to myself, our honeymoon's going to be spectacular. And you can pick where you want to go.
You have no idea. This is a whole new relationship right here.
You might have to forego some of the things you might own now because old Den ain't going to want that. But, you know.
We'll work something out.
All right. We'll forget it. Anyway, I appreciate you guys being here. We do have to close this one out.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.